Join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Our speaker tonight is Andy Itapa from Cuyahoga Falls. Andy?
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Can you all hear me back there? I'm glad we started a meeting off with a serenity prayer because I know I couldn't get up here and lead a meeting without saying a serenity prayer first. And lest I forget, I know I couldn't stay sober without prayer. Now, tell a little story about myself and explain that. Just perhaps a year ago, I was at the ward at St. Thomas Hospital, and there was a visitor from New York area, and he's in the ward. And he was talking up to everybody there, and he said something about that he don't believe in God, and prayer doesn't have nothing to do with his sobriety, but he's been sober a year. And the way this man was talking, I was sitting there, and I found myself nodding my head. And there was a fellow sitting there in the next chair, a guy I sponsored, a guy who spent perhaps 5-6 years in Skid Row, a guy had gone all the way down, and a man who's been sober for over a year now. And he looked at him, just a little bit of a guy, and he said, "Hey, buddy," I couldn't stay sober without prayer. And it sort of brought me to my senses because I will say this, that for the last 3 years, anyhow, I've said the serenity prayer at least once a day, every day. And I also know there's been days that I said the serenity prayer, who knows how many times, 100, 200, 300 times. There has been a few rough days in the last 3 years since I've had my last drink where I said the serenity prayer over and over all day long to stay sober. So I'd be a heck of a guy to say prayer doesn't enter into my sobriety. Also, I can never get up here and talk in front of an audience. Or I probably couldn't talk in front of any audience except an AA audience, but I couldn't do it without saying the serenity prayer first. My name is Andy. Well, first of all, I want to welcome, there's a new man here attending his first meeting, and I do want to welcome him. I hope he comes back regardless of what I might say tonight. I hope he understands that this is an individual program. You get 50 people and I find 50 different ways to stay sober. But basically, it's the same. We do it one day at a time. We do it with our association here in AA. And we do have a program to follow. I'll get into that later. My name is Andy Tapp and I'm an alcoholic. I was born in Chicago in 1929. Oldest of a family of 6 children. My dad was an alcoholic. And I learned what alcohol was early in life. When I was quite young, I remember the police cars coming to the house in the middle of the night, picking my dad up. I remember the hospitals. I remember the jobs he lost. I remember the troubles and the things, the heartaches that happened. But I also remember some of the family saying, "Little Andy will never drink. He can see what it's doing to his dad." And I do know I thought, then and there, there must be something to this drinking. Because no matter how much trouble he got into, no matter how sick he got, he always went back to the bottle. And I thought there must be something in there. And my earliest recollection is that I couldn't wait until I was old enough to find out. Well, due to my dad's drinking, well, I'll say this, he never did anything serious, never a felony, just the stupid, dumb things that alcoholics tend to do when they're drinking, the same things I did later on. But due to his drinking, one thing, now that I spent a good deal of time in foster homes and everything else, and I'll skip over the circumstances, but when I was 15 years old, I ran away from home. It was in 1945. World War II was on, and I joined the Marines. I went through Parris Island boot camp, and I had no problem drinking because they didn't give us anything to drink. But the day I got out of boot camp, the day I got on a first troop train, the day I first put on a Marine uniform and was turned free, I jumped off the train, I got a pint of whiskey, and got back on the train. I do recall a brand. It was Southern Comfort. Perhaps you wonder why. I didn't know one brand from the other. But I had heard Bob Hope many times say Southern Comfort on the radio, and everybody always laughed. So I just thought it was a pretty good brand. Well, I drank that pint. And to be honest, maybe it was only half a pint. I don't remember now. But I drank it right down. Well, right at that time, I had my first blackout. I did things I don't remember. At that time, I had my first pass out because I passed out for a few hours. Of course, I was young and not used to drinking. And I guess I even told a couple sergeants off. I don't know what all I did. When I came to, they told me about me swinging from the chandeliers on the train and all these crazy things. And I remember an older fellow asked me if I remember doing this, and I said no. And he said, "This is a blackout. This is a dangerous condition." He said, "Do you always drink like this?" Heck, it's the first time I drank. Well, I said, "Yes." And I thought, that's why you drank. And for all practical purposes, for the next 16, 17 years, that's exactly the way I drank. I always drank too much. I don't believe I ever had 1 minute from the time I took my first drink that I could call myself a social drinker. Well, sure, I went to work just about every day. I stayed out of jail most of the time. I thought I was doing okay. I thought I was handling my life. But I was powerless over alcohol from the time I took my first drink. Well, I got off in China, in the Marines. And I ended up by having my 16th, 17th, 18th, and 19th birthday in China. Perhaps you wonder why so many years in China. I would not come back to this country because I knew you had to be 21 to go in a beer joint and drink. And I said, in China, they don't care, and I'll stay here. And I did stay there. When I was 16 or 17, I had the nickname of alcoholic in the 4th Marine Regiment in Tsingtao, China. When I say nickname, they roll call them on, they holler Adams here, Baker here, they holler, instead of hollering Tampa, they say alcoholic, they holler here. And this was a big joke, but it didn't bother me, and I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I thought this was just a nickname, the guys like me, and heck, I knew I wasn't an alcoholic. And there's a number of sergeants and NCOs there that say, this is Andy Tampa, he's born in Chicago, raised in China, the youngest alcoholic in the Marine Corps. That was my nickname. I wasn't fooling anybody. I think they all knew I was underage, but I did my job, and I stayed out of trouble, and I stuck it out. I don't know how I got through them 3 years. I've seen a lot of things. I'd be in a big beer joint, and sometimes the blood would flow, and sometimes somebody could kill in them joints. The Filipinos and the Koreans and the Japs and the Chinese and American Marines and the Russians, and they'd all get taken sides and get thrown in chairs and bottles, and I've seen this many nights. And sometimes I was so drunk I didn't know what was going on, but I never got scratched, really. So just the luck of the alcoholic, I guess. When 49, I had to come back to the States. I couldn't ship over anymore. The communists took over the country. Well, I came back to the States, had 90 days of leave coming, and spent it all on the West Coast. Matter of fact, I spent a good deal of leave right on the base, because I figured my money would go far. The Marines will feed me every day for free. I had a place to sleep, don't worry about a hotel, but I was free for 90 days to drink, and that's just about what I did. The Korean War broke out. I seen a little bit of Korea. But along about that time, I made staff sergeant. Basically, I stayed out of trouble in the service. I don't know how. When I drank, I always got drunk, but I tried to steer clear of trouble. I guess I knew deep down inside, if you got in a brig, they didn't give you nothing to drink. I don't know why, but I did stay out of trouble. But I made staff sergeant. Along about that time, I got a chance to get out. Well, I knew this alcohol was getting the best of me. I was starting to skip some of the jobs I should have done. I knew this was catching up with me. And I thought, well, now's a good time to go. And I got out and went to Alaska. Don't ask me why I picked Alaska, but I went to Alaska. Well, I arrived in Alaska. I won't go through the details of the story of through Canada, British Columbia, and Yukon Territory, and going up that way. It was quite a trip. But I hit Anchorage, Alaska. And just as I pulled in, I ran out of gas in front of a gas station. I thought I was all right, but I didn't have any money. I just made it there, ran out of gas and flat broke. Walked up, the first person I seen, he told me about a job in the railroad, and I got a job in the railroad. He gave me a place to sleep and a meal ticket book, good for $50 worth of food. Well, I found out the first day you could turn these meal tickets in for money at 75% at the restaurant. So I made out pretty good. And I'll go through this Alaska bit, and I want to mention one thing about this Alaska, which will explain something. In the 3 years I was there, I made, well, I'm sure, over $25,000 because I got firing on the railroad. And we had lots of hours, and it's more money I ever made in my life, including today. But at the end of 3 years, I left Alaska without a suit, without a white shirt, automobile. I think I had $300 in a bank. I wouldn't have had that, but I sent it back to the States. But I owed Internal Revenue about $1,200. And I left Alaska in a hurry. Just like always. Nothing serious. I'll say now, I never committed a felony, but I sure pulled some dumb tricks and got the law mad at me. But I left Alaska in a hurry and came back to the States. And just through stubbornness, I didn't go back and lost my job up there. And this would be about 53, and I got married. Met my wife. Well, every time my wife and I went out on a date in Illinois, I got drunk and she had to drive me home. Maybe that's why she went out with me. She liked to drive a car. It could be. But we did get married. And I guess she thought in her mind that she could tame me and everything would be all right. And I thought it would. But we were married less than 3 months, maybe 4 months, and I ran off and left her. Well, left her, and also there's a little situation in Rogers Park District of Chicago where they had me in jail overnight, and the judge said I was going to get 30 days without bail. I thought, well, I'm not going to serve 30 days, so I went to Akron. Didn't even tell her goodbye. But after a couple months in Akron, I got a job here. I sent for her, and she came out, and I said, everything will be okay now. Away from your family and away from my family, and that's the whole problem. Of course, as everybody here knows, the problem was still there because I was a problem, and the alcohol was a problem, and I couldn't run away from it. I tried it several times. Well, we got this furnished apartment on the west side of Akron. I got a job as a mechanic, worked in a Ford garage. And everything was fine, except I couldn't make it straight home from work. I'd tell myself all day long, over and over, straight home from work tonight. Don't stop for a beer. If you stop for a beer, you stay till they close. And I'd tell myself that right up to 5 o'clock, and I'd start for home and tell myself that. I'd cross the street, and I'd tell myself that. I'd walk in a beer joint and say, well, I'll have just 2 beers tonight, and I'll be home on time. Well, you know the story. Very, very few nights did I get home on time. And if I would accidentally happened to get home on time for supper, and it wasn't ready. Well, let's say for 3 weeks straight, I'd never been home in time for supper, and one night I come home, it isn't ready. Well, I would raise all kind of heck, and I'd storm right back out to the joint. Well, that's all it was, nothing spectacular. Most of my drinking was beer. I'll say this now, 90% of what I drank was beer. Why? I was definitely scared of whiskey. When I drank whiskey, I completely lost control. Usually when I drank whiskey, I end up in a fight or in jail or something, and with beer, I had a certain amount of control. I really thought I could control beer completely, but certainly I couldn't. Well, during these 9 years or 8 years, and up till I came in AA, things started happening. I made jail a few times, started tearing up automobiles. I like to stand up and say I had one car wreck, or 3 or 5 or 6. That's all I had in these 10 years. For 10 years, I had 9 or perhaps 10 automobile wrecks. Every year, just about, I had a wreck. I had so many points that it was pitiful. I never took my license. I get a letter from the state saying I had 9 and 10 or 11 points. Well, I knew I had 14 or 15. Towards the end there, even if I got caught by radar, I wouldn't appear in front of a judge. I could no more stand in front of a judge anymore. I'd pay a lawyer $100 to go down and plead me guilty, or to keep postponing until I lost a couple points, then I knew I could stand gaining a couple. And this is where I went through life. It just always one crisis right after another. Changing insurance companies before they change me. Things like this. But nothing big, it's just things like this happening. I learned how to pray about this time, perhaps. I would start for home, and I'd pray. I'd say, God, just let me get home without having a wreck or the police catching me drunk, and I'll quit. I'll quit, sure as heck. Well, I'd get home and go right to the refrigerator and open a couple more beers. Another thing, I was on night shift about this time, and I kind of like to remember this thing because it's perhaps typical of a person just before they come in AA. I'd get home at night, and I'd be, of course, intoxicated or drunk, if you will. And I look in the mirror, and I couldn't stand what I seen. I weighed about 205 pounds then, and a fat, bloaty face, and I'm still getting heavy again, but I was much worse. And I knew what I was doing, and I'd always counting how many beers I drank today. And this would be a working day, and I'd count, I'd cover, I drank 16 or 18 beers, and then have one open air, and I knew I couldn't afford this, was behind in a house payment, and everything was getting bad. Boss was getting mad at me, wife was getting mad, and I'd say, well, I'm going to quit in the morning. And I'd go to the refrigerator, and all the beer I had, I'd dump down the sink, and I'd line all the bottles up nice and pretty, and I'd go to bed. Well, my wife should get up and say, my God, did you drink all this? Well, what could I say? The next morning now, this confidence I had last night when I was full of alcohol is gone. I always say, when a man says he can quit drinking, catch him the next morning. Catch him the next day when he wants to drink and ask if he can quit. You get an honest answer. Well, I wouldn't even tell her I dumped it out because I knew I was heading for the joint. And I'd get in a car and I'd start down to the beer joint and I'd think, oh, are you going to quit? You're not going to drink. You're not going to drink. And I'd reach and see how much money I had, shake the change, see if I had a dollar bill somewhere. Pull right up in front of the lot. You're not going to drink. Go and order a beer. Think, well, I'll order a beer because I'm here. Well, I might as well drink it. Well, I get a hold of this beer, and I look to the right. Here'd be a guy with a big glass of wine. You know, I'm talking like 6, 7 in the morning. I think, how awful. Wine in the morning. Gee, that guy is... I just shake my head, and I look over here, and here's a guy with a doubleheader and a beer, and I think, whiskey and beer in the morning? Oh. And I pick up that beer, and I take a sip, and Daisy, the barmaid, would say, is it going to stay down, Andy? It'll be going up and down like a yo-yo. But you see, I could see everybody but myself. Everybody but myself. I couldn't see the forest for the trees. Well, right before Christmas, 4 years ago, 4 and a half years ago almost, can't think what year it is now. About a month before Christmas, situation is going like this. The boss is getting madder, and I was getting where I wouldn't even answer the door if the paper boy was there. My wife would leave the money for the paper, 55 cents in a thingy punch. Well, nine times out of ten, I'd take it. She had to put out two or three times for him. And if he would show up, I wouldn't pay him because I wouldn't even answer the door. I couldn't face the paper. Well, I wasn't ashamed of him. I didn't want to face anybody. I just wanted to set the beer joints. Work? Sure, I wanted to work because I had the money to drink. But that's all. Well, I said, what do you want for Christmas? Anything you want. Big shot me. I was probably trying to butter up so I can get a couple dollars, Oliver. And she said, one thing. Just one thing is all I'll ever want from you. I just name it. Just quit drinking. This constant every night drunkenness. Well, I said, what the hell kind of present's that? Of course, she started crying. I stormed out of the house, went down the corner, told everybody what a louse my wife was. Didn't tell anybody just why, but she's a louse. That's why he's drinking. And I stayed drunk right up until Christmas. And I tied a good one on that month. Well, Christmas Eve came along. There's me sitting back in the pub, broke, thinking about I hadn't spent any money. I had two boys. Today I have three boys, but I had two boys then. And I'm thinking about it. I said, well, she wanted me to quit drinking for Christmas. I'll fix her wagon. That's what I'll do. So Christmas morning comes. She gets me up around 8 o'clock to watch kids open a couple of presents. And I go in the living room and sit down and watch them open the presents. And first thing you know, it's 9 o'clock. And she says, you know, you're on your eighth or ninth beer already. Well, there I was. The day I was going to quit for her present. I'm drinking beer this morning just like you wake up, you take a breath of air. That's my pattern on the weekend. I get out of bed, start drinking beer. Well, I thought, I'm going to quit today, but you don't quit all at once, and I'll tell her the good news before the day's over. Well, along about 2 or 3 o'clock, dinner was ready. She's a good cook. We had a goose, mashed potatoes, dressing, the whole works. Just my wife and the two young children, myself, we sat down, and I couldn't eat. I sat there, and I'd pick that fork up, and I knew. Does anybody here ever have a day when you couldn't eat, when you wanted to eat? I couldn't eat. I knew it was an insult, an absolute insult. It's not the worst insult, of course, but in some ways, I knew right then and there, it was just an awful thing for her to fix a big meal. The kids couldn't eat much, and she has an appetite like a bird, and it'd go to waste. And I sat there, and for $1,000, I would have ate a little bit, but I couldn't. I was too sick. I left and went back to the joint. And I stayed in the joint, and I tied a good one on Christmas Day. A barmaid I know since then told me that if I said once, I said 20 times, this is the last beer I'm ever going to drink, and just give me this last beer. I'm going home, and you'll never see me drinking again. 5 minutes later, I'd be on the last beer. Well, there I was that day. The day I was going to quit for my wife. I couldn't get drunk, not all the way drunk. I couldn't get sober. I was throwing some of this up as fast as I was drinking, and I'd change brands, saying your beer is green, your beer is stale. I was sick, couldn't get well. No, it wasn't a day I was going to quit for. Well, later that night, I went into some kind of blackout because I don't really remember what happened. Except that night, I called Alcoholic Anonymous and went home and went to bed. Maybe I called them for home. I don't know. And they took my name and address. I don't remember doing this. The next morning, along about 9:30 or so, my wife woke me up. Said, somebody from Alcoholic Anonymous is on the phone. Shall I hang up? I guess she thought it's another one of my tricks to get out of the house again. And I sat up in bed, and I shook my head, and I says, no, there's something the matter with me. I better talk to him. Well, I got to the phone, and there's a woman on the phone, Peg Robinson, who works in the intergroup office in Akron. And she said, I understand you have a drinking problem and want to do something about it. Well, I couldn't answer her. I just got out of bed. Does anybody here know how it is in the morning when you just wake up and sick? You got to heave a little bit first. You got to clear your throat. All I could do was sort of gag on the telephone. And she says, well, I know how it is. You just got up. You can't talk. She said, now, I'll hang up for 5 or 10 minutes, and I'll call you back, and you'll feel more like talking then. And she hung up. Well, I thought, somebody knows. I don't have to lie about smoking too much last night or sore throat. They just know how it is in the morning. Well, she called back, and to make a long story short, it's going to send two men out, and I asked if they had an office and if I could come down there. She says, come on down. It's 41 South High Street. Well, I got in the car, and I started down the expressway, and a thought occurred to me, Andy, boy, you did it now. You must have really been drunk last night. You were so drunk you called Alcoholic Anonymous. Now your wife's going to know you drink too much. And I just thought it's a dumb, stupid trick. And how am I going to get out of this? But then the thought struck me, what if they won't take you? What if they find out all you drank was beer? And what if they tell you to get out for a few more years? Or, you know, or what if they find out you've been in jail? Maybe they don't like people who've been in jail, you know, undesirable. I knew very little, nothing about the program. And I thought, well, I'll lie to them. I'll play it by ear and I'll lie, but I'm going to get in. And I was so scared, if they wouldn't take me, what was I going to do? I mean, drive the car off the bridge or something. That's the frame of mind I was in. Well, I knew nothing about alcoholism or anything. And I got down to the office, and one of the first questions this woman asked me, she said, are you an alcoholic? Well, I stood there and I said, yes, that must be it. And I think I emphasized my hand on the desk. I said, that must be what's the matter with me. I said, that must be it. Now, I'll say here and now, for me, or for a person who never admitted there's an alcoholic, that was half the battle, exactly half the battle. The rest comes with accepting it. But now, that wouldn't be half the battle for everybody in the sense that I think tonight there's perhaps millions of people who would like to be sober. There's millions of people who would like to not drink and do the right thing. And they're alcoholics, and they know they're alcoholics, but they don't know what to do about it. They don't know how to stay sober. I learned in AA how to stay sober. Well, after a while, a couple of men came down to the office, and I talked to them. One of them asked me, have you got a job? Is your boss mad at you? I said, well, he said he's going to fire me after the holidays, but maybe he won't. He said, keep on drinking, you won't have a job. Boy, I knew this was the truth. My days are numbered there at this company, and I knew that. They said, how about your wife? Are you married? Is she already divorced you? I said, she said she will, but I don't think so. I don't think she'll divorce me, and we'll get along pretty good, I guess, in kind of Christmas. He says, keep on drinking, you won't have a family. Well, I knew that was the truth. These guys didn't kid around. The first couple, three things they said to me was just hitting the nail right on the head. Well, they took me down to St. Thomas and showed me around the hospital. One was going to meet me, and one of them didn't know for sure, and was thinking about it. He said, well, we'll show you the place. Well, they went in, and there's a bunch of people all dressed up there, and there's a bunch of pajamas. And they said, these men are all alcoholics, they're all drunks, just like you and me. And here's the hospital, so all there is to it. Well, I thought baloney. This guy in a suit over here, he's a cop. That guy's a psychiatrist, detective, doctor, interns. I had them all figured out. I thought, these people sitting around here are not ex-drunks. This I couldn't believe. Patients, I figured they're drunks, but I figured I'd open my mouth and throw me back in a padded cell somewhere and I'll just keep my mouth shut. Well, later on I started for home and I got thinking about it, realizing I was getting sicker that afternoon and realizing that I probably should go in the hospital, but I couldn't stay sober. I drank every day and I didn't think I could sober up. I called my boss at home, at his home, and told him I was going in a joined Alcoholic Anonymous. Never going to drink again, but I wanted to go in this hospital. And he says, you just get to work, or you don't have a job. He's in another thing. He says, I didn't tell you to do nothing drastic like join Alcoholic Anonymous. He says, I didn't tell you not to quit drinking. He says, I just told you not to drink so much. Well, he says, use your backbone and a little willpower. He says, you don't need Alcoholic Anonymous. He says, to quit drinking, just don't drink so much. Well, like I say, I knew next to nothing that day, but he knew even less. And basically, I knew this, because I either drank too much or not at all. Mostly it's too much. So I didn't go in the hospital. I did go to work. Next day, things started happening. I suppose I heard a few voices. The biggest thing, I started getting so nervous, and I wanted to drink so bad, and my wife is at work. Kids were in school. And I'd walk around that house in circles. Tears like on my eyes. I wanted to drink, and I'd walk up and hit the wall with my fist. My hand was about half swollen. And I got through that week. I called my family doctor. I'll give you an idea what nice things that start happening when you join AA. He says, come to my office. He says, I don't know. He's out to talk to you next week. I don't know nothing about Alcoholic Anonymous. No, you shouldn't drink. He says, this office call is free, and you go to this people's drug store. He says, and the prescription waiting for you, and you come back. I got a prescription. That was free. I had a little bit of money, but he wouldn't take it. Came back in a week, and he told me, just stay with Alcoholic Anonymous. I see many patients. He says, dozens and dozens. They come in, they're sick, they're in DTs, they're in all kind of shape. And they say they'll never drink again, so I'll just help them. He says, I come out, I give them a shot, I help them. And a few months later, they're drunk again. He says, and you said you're never going to drink again? He says, I don't know. He says, I hear many people say that, and always drunk again, and some are dead. He says, this office calls are free. He says, I don't want you to pay me for it. He says, I'd like to see you stay sober. Don't ever drink again. He says, besides that, I've been treating your wife for her nerves, and you stay sober, it's going to help. Later on, I run into this doctor down at St. Thomas in the corridor. And instead of him telling me how good I look or anything, he says, your wife's nerves are pretty nice now. So a lot of nice things happen when you sober up. Well, the first meeting I attended was the Chicago Falls Group, perhaps 5-6 days after I decided to come in AA. Well, I didn't know what I'd find at that group, if it'd be like a prayer meeting, a bunch of people long-faced sitting around crying. I didn't know, but by then I knew I wanted to stay sober. I was going to go and find out. Well, I went to that meeting, and it was just like here, no difference, perhaps a few more people. And I went in there, and I heard a fellow lead whose name's on one of the bigger banks in Akron. A fellow had been sober 20-some-odd years. He spoke that night. Of course, I knew the name because I'd seen the name on the bank many times. But after the meeting, I looked around, and it dawned on me, this is where I belong. These people are my friends. I thought everybody's an alcoholic. All the wives, everybody. If there's been a kid there, I thought there's an alcoholic too, I guess. But I just felt really wonderful, like I had finally arrived, that I had found something. I believe I had tears of gratitude in my eyes that night. Well, I joined that group. I was on a night shift. Could only attend meetings on weekends. I did attend fairly good on weekends. Oh, some 4 or 5 months later, everything's going fine. Bills are paid. Probably had a couple hundred in the bank, maybe. I could answer the door once in a while. Boss is happy with me. I'm walking along the street one Saturday, and I'm thinking, now, I haven't wanted a drink in months. I have no desire for a drink. I could care less if I drink or don't drink. I must not be an alcoholic anymore because I don't want to drink. Well, I thought into my mind what these fellows had told me, but what the heck, you know? I don't want to drink, so I thought maybe if he was craving a drink and took it, he'd be in trouble. But I didn't want a drink, so I walked in. Why I walked in and took a drink when I didn't want it, I don't know to this day. But I walked in and had a beer. As soon as I had the beer, I knew something was I'd done wrong. I just basically felt something was wrong. But I went on to drink another week or 10 days, and there I was right back in the same position. Sobered up. Did it 3-4 more months. Stayed sober several more months. But anyhow, to make a long story short, in the first 14 months I was in AA, I went ahead and do this 3 or 4 times. I would go to meetings on weekends. I would never go to a meeting and lie to anybody. I think every time I went to a meeting and say, how you doing? I'd say, oh, okay now, I was drunk 2 weeks ago, but I'm okay now, or something like this. I tried. And even when I was trying to drink, I knew I was still an alcoholic. Never once for a second this year did I, or would I deny the fact that I was an alcoholic, even to myself. I might give you an illustration of what happened. My last drunkenness beer joint is a horseshoe-shaped affair. Sitting across on the other side was a person about my age. I had seen him in AA at a meeting. And he came over, he said, buy you a drink. He says, and he grins at me. I said, well. And he says, I'm not an alcoholic. I said, I'm glad to hear that. He says, I didn't think you were either. I said, oh, but I am. He says, what? I said, oh, but I am. He said, why are you drinking? I guess because I don't have good sense, but I won't be doing it long. But even there, I couldn't sit there and say I'm not an alcoholic, because I knew I was. I knew I had to come back sooner or later. Well, I ruined his evening for drinking. Mine was already ruined, so I came out ahead, I guess. Number of days later, this one lasted about 2 weeks. There was an afternoon trying to get well. I had to go to work at 4:30. It's 3 o'clock. I already had a dozen or so beers in me trying to get well. And it dawns on me, I have to go to work in an hour. If I go to work like this, I'm going to get canned. The boss has already warned everybody, including mostly me. If I go home, the wife's going to be mad because I didn't go to work, and I'll storm out of the house and drink some more. If I stay here, I get drunker, and I'm trying to figure out what to do. I called somebody I know in AA, and I talked to Sister Agnes, matter of fact. And she says, Andy, I have a bed for you. If you've never been through the ward, come up here. Talk to somebody else, and he says, I don't think you're sincere. He says, I don't think you want to be sober. I says, oh, yeah? Well, most alcoholics, when they're drunk, don't make smart decisions. But I made one that day. I call up the police. They came out to the beer joint and said, somebody call the police? As I did. They said, drunk here? As I am. They said, you crazy? I said, maybe that too. Make a long story short, he took me down to the jail. Now, he offered to drive me home. Matter of fact, the policeman took me to the chief of police home. He said, what do I do with a case like this? And I wasn't that drunk. I was sick, certainly. But I knew I had to cut it off right now. Turned out I knew the chief of police. I didn't even know this. I knew him fairly well. I wasn't aware of the fact that he was chief. And he tried talking me into going home. And finally, I said, well, take him down there. They took me down jail and locked me up. Bonzi came by, you went out, you got any money? Sure, I had money. I said, no. Well, I'm going to spend the night here. I'm going to get sober. But I called the night boss at work, told him where I was. He called my wife, and my wife sent two AAs out. They came out. When they came down to jail, I left. Went down to the Arrow Club and sat there and had some coffee. Felt pretty lousy. Had to see the judge in the morning, of course. Well, when I seen the judge in the morning, oh, I was getting sick then. And he seen the papers, how I had myself arrested. And he says, have you ever tried Alcoholic Anonymous? I says, yes, I did. He says, what's the matter with it? I says, nothing. Something's the matter with me. And sure as you turn me loose, I'm going back and I'm going to stay there. And I'm going to stay sober. And he says, well, I'm going to put you on 9 months probation. He said, you come back in 9 months, he said, and you hadn't been drinking? Of course I'll be lenient with you. I'll be happy. On the other hand, oh, boy. I don't know what this other hand would have happened, but he let me know there is another hand. Well, I left the jail, walked down the street, and I got thinking, how can I go back to AA? How can I go back to my group? How can I face these people? I felt so ashamed. And it's really coming over me now that this was an awful situation. I thought, I just cannot go back. I cannot face these people. And then the thought occurred to me, some I had heard in meetings more than once. I heard people say, I'm in AA because there's no place else to go. Well, I always thought it was sort of ungrateful to say this because any old port in a storm, you know. But I didn't have the meeting list. But then it dawned on me, I have to go back. I have no choice. I have no place else in this world to go but back to AA. And certainly I pondered and thought about this a while. And it was the truth. Where else could I have gone? Could I have gone, stayed away from AA and gone home and stayed sober? Certainly not. I had tried it. I couldn't do it. And each time I got in trouble, it got worse. Or I could have got drunk and ended up in jail. That wouldn't be going back to AA. I could have got drunk and flipped my lid and ended up in mental hospital. Could have got drunk and tore my car up again. Maybe next time not survived. But AA seemed like a better way out. And I realized what the men meant when they said, I am here because I had no place else to go. And it was the truth. It was me. I couldn't think of a place in the world where I'd find serenity and peace of mind, a place where I'd fit in and where I belonged at AA. I understand I wanted to go back, but I was too ashamed. Well, I asked my boss, I said, now you've been keeping me on night shift. I have service for days. I have 7 years service here. I either get days or I quit. He says, you got days tomorrow. He says, I've only been keeping you on night shift so you'd stay sober. I said, well, I want to go to these AA meetings. And he put me on day shift. I told myself, the trouble you had, Andy, is because you couldn't go to meetings. Now let's see if you're sincere. I think the first year, most of my prayers, I'd ask God, am I sincere? Do I want to stay sober? I didn't know. Today I don't use that prayer anymore because I feel I must be sincere. I wouldn't be here. I don't worry about it anyhow. Well, I went to meetings every single night for 6 months in the Akron area. Every night, I never missed. Well, this is quite an ordeal to work every day and come home tired. And towards the end of that fourth or fifth, 6 month, I was kind of wishing my wife, say, hey, why don't you stay home once in a while? But she didn't. She knew I was sober. And a couple of times, I just a little hint, like maybe I was going to stay home. You know, and she'd say, no, you said you wanted to go to meetings. You just go ahead and go. She said, I don't worry about you as long as you're going to meetings. So, meetings I went. Today, I've been sober a little over 3 years. I still go to two or three meetings a week and visit the hospital quite regularly also. I do what I'm asked to do, like leading meetings or sponsoring or just talking to a person. Every day I have an AA contact, some way or another. Every day, if it's nothing else, I'm on the phone talking to somebody. But I know a day hasn't gone by in 3 years that somehow, some way or another, I haven't talked to an AA. I haven't gone to their home, seen them in a meeting, called them on the phone, or something like this. I read all the literature I get a hold of. Now, I'm using these notes a little bit now. It isn't because I'm not sincere. It's because I just don't have too much education, and I get nervous sometimes up here. I've gone a lot of 12-step calls. I've tried to help a lot of people. I'm not going to take credit for the few that are sober, because if I did, I'd have to take credit for the ones that are drunk, and I'd be minus something or another, you know? So I haven't had too much luck there, except it kept me sober. I don't feel as I've done any harm, and I've been willing. Somewhere or another along the line, I read these words. Who is more deserving of love and compassion, the sinner or saint? It is easy to love the good and the strong, but who will love the wicked and depraved alcoholic? I was surprised to discover my own emotions that I was truly willing to love and attempt to help a person who asked for help, an alcoholic. When I say I surprised discovered my own emotions most of my life. It was me. It was I'm the only guy I worried about. But I stopped worrying about myself and stopped worrying about somebody else. Things got a lot easier for me. We have a program in this fellowship. It's in the 12 steps. Without the 12 steps, we'll be a bunch of people milling around without any purpose in life. It's important. All we'd be doing is going to meetings and boosting each other's morale. With the 12 steps, it gives us a purpose in life. It gives us a definite goal, a way to live. And really, they're not too hard because basically all they are is what we should have done in the first place. I'm not going to try and tell you I have worked all the 12 steps. Certainly not. I work at them. I keep them in mind. I read them. Some of them I've taken, some I haven't. The first step, admit it was powerless over alcohol and a life has become unmanageable. This is, of course, the most important step, especially for a new man. Admit we're powerless over alcohol. Certainly we are. We get drinking. We don't have a bit of power. Sometimes a person will ask me, what is an alcoholic? What is your definition of an alcoholic? Everybody has their own idea. But I stop and think, if I could go in a beer joint and have one or two beers occasionally and walk off and not want anymore, I could possibly drink. But I've never had one or two beers in my life that I didn't want more, and usually I took more. To me, this is sort of a definition of an alcoholic, a person's life becoming manageable, a person who can't have a couple of drinks without wanting anymore. The reason I say want, perhaps a person could pull himself together, make up their mind, well, I'm going to go in a joint every night for a year and have two beers and or one shot and leave and try and prove something. Or maybe occasionally you find somebody who can do this, who can go in a joint and have one or two and leave and not have any more. But is he proving anything? If he's an alcoholic, he'll want more, and he'll be pretty miserable. It's a lot easier to leave it alone. The only defense we have against alcohol is not taking the first drink. That's the only defense I have. If I don't take the first drink, I'm not going to take the second. And I don't have to worry about not taking a drink the rest of my life. AA has taught me how to take it one day at a time. Each day I stay sober. I can stay sober today. I don't think I'll take a drink. I get some friends here who'll get me back home tonight. I don't want a drink today, anyhow. I probably wouldn't even take one tomorrow. I'm not worried about tomorrow, really. But the thing I think about, as long as I stay close to AA, I'll feel this way. I'll go day at a time without wanting or without taking a drink. But suppose I would decide, well, I can run the show now. I don't need any more AA. I'm going to skip these meetings. I'm going to stay home and work and be a good father and all these, go baseball and do all these things. Get two jobs, maybe do all kinds of things. And let's say 4 or 5 months or 3 months from now, how would I think then? Would my thinking be the same as it is tonight? I doubt it. As long as I stay close to AA, my thinking is going to stay the same, and I can stay sober, I believe. But sure in heck, I get away from it. I wouldn't have a chance of snowball hell of staying sober without AA. I just put it that way. What AA is and is not, is my own opinions mostly. AA is not an employment agency. It's not a way of getting out of jail. It's not even necessarily a way of sobering up. A lot of people think AA is a way to get sober. I don't think it is. Sometimes they help a guy get sober. What AA is, it's a way of life whereby we can remain sober one day at a time. That's what it is. And a pretty darn nice way of life. I go to meetings because I like to. I don't go to a meeting every night any night because I'm afraid I'll take a drink. I go to a meeting to see who's there. I like the people. I go to a meeting because I feel happy around AAs. You must want to stay sober more than you want to drink. This is sort of basic. A person has to have a will and keep in mind that they want to stay sober. And then if you get thinking you want to drink and you stay, your thoughts stay in, oh boy, poor old me, everybody in this world can drink but me, you know? Heck, there's perhaps 500,000 in AA and we're staying sober and doing fine, so don't ever think you're alone, that everybody can drink but you. None of us in AA can drink. We know this. You must surrender in order to win. There is an original thought in my head, ladies and gentlemen. It's just things I learned from the old-timers. In order to win and stay sober, you must surrender. Surrender to the fact that you can't handle it. Just a simple thing like that. Surrender to the fact that you're powerless over alcohol. If somebody else can drink socially, fine. That's not my problem. I'm not worried about the man who wants to drink or who can drink. I worry about me and the new person or somebody who asked me for help. or anybody in the fellowship. This program, this AA fellowship, is a step forward and a step up in life. The reason I say this, certainly down at the hospital, every once in a while a new man will be in there, and he'll feel so remorseful that life has come to this. Life has come to the point where he is an alcoholic, and life has come to the point where he has quit drinking and he can't handle his own affairs. But he don't stop and think the years of drinking he's staggering down the street, he's in jail, and his wife is mad, and all the neighbors know he's drunk, and fellow employees know he's drunk. You don't feel too remorseful there. But if you just stop and think, I don't have to drink anymore. Alcohol, I'll say in my case, alcohol is not my problem anymore. I have no drinking problem. I told our new boss, we have a new boss now, not too long ago, he said, I understand you have a drinking problem. As you understand wrong, buddy. As I haven't had a drink in over 3 years. As I have no drinking problem. As alcohol is removed from my life. I says, I didn't say I'm never drinking again. I never want to make a big statement like that again. But alcohol is not my problem anymore. The biggest problem I have is myself. Another thought, I've talked perhaps long enough. How much mentality does it take to go out and get a drink? As an illustration, let's say somebody escaped from a mental institution, a man with an IQ of minus 60, in pajamas, and go in a beer joint and sit down and throw some money down and go, and point at the beer. You know somewhere a bartender's going to give him a drink. It don't take much sense to walk in and get a drink. Anybody can do it. I think it takes a man to stay sober. That's about all I have to say. I've talked too long. I have a couple more notes, but I won't go through them. I have hope for the future. Tomorrow looks pretty nice. When I was drinking, the next day didn't look very good to me. I'm respectfully, humbly hopeful for the future. And I thank all of you for being a good audience. As I said before, I couldn't talk in front of anybody but an AA group. I want to thank you all for helping me stay sober tonight. Thank you for asking me, Ann.